Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively the Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 329. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's good. Just a little tired. Kids went back to school. Well, Hayden went back to school. My Brooke, 2-month-old, did not. But Hayden got a cold and gave it to Brooke the first week. So that's been fun. But other than that, we're good. Can't complain. It's ready to chat some more ball, get back on a normal recording schedule, which will be good. And finish out the season strong.
I literally think that's like the worst time when you have one kid in school and another that's like in daycare or something like that. So you got both sources of potential sicknesses. That's a tough time. But then once they get both in the school, then it gets easier again. But yeah, it's been a long week. Obviously, I was dealing with the sickness last week and Chris stepped in and hosted because I was sounding like crap. And voice is mostly back now. I say 95% back. So feels good to sound like myself again. Got some baseball today. I saw the last double-A home run from Mr. Roman Anthony. Him and the other big three all up to triple-A now. We'll talk about that later on. Got a lot of fun players to talk about today, so we'll get into that in a second. But before we do, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for all of our rankings and more work each and every day. And, of course, check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. Use that code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package, baseball, basketball, football, whatever you want. RotoBaller's got it over at RotoBaller.com. All right, Chris, let's start off with a trio of Jacksons, because there's three Jacksons right now playing very well, all three great young talented players: Jackson Holliday, Jackson Chourio, and Jackson Merrill. Let's start with Jackson Holliday. Obviously, the first stint back in April didn't exactly go too well, but this second stint, he's cooled off a little bit the last few days, still going much better than last time. Already has 5 home runs in his time back here after hitting none in his first 34 plate appearances back in April. Really tapping into that power. We knew the raw power was there. We saw the EVs and everything in AAA. I was wondering, Like, how much power does he get into in games in the major leagues? Is he like a 15 to 18 homer guy? Is he 20 plus? Is he 25 plus? That was my question with him. I obviously love the talent, phenomenal pure hitter. You know, strike zone awareness is very advanced for his age and one of the best you've ever seen for his age. But he's really tapping into that power. He's a good athlete too. He's not going to steal you a ton of bags, but maybe this is a guy that's just like an annual 2020 threat with a high average and high OBP, and he's starting to show that now. So what have you seen from Holiday here in his second stint, Chris?
He looks more comfortable, and I think that's really the most notable thing is that he got his confidence back, and I think that the Orioles handled the whole situation properly. He didn't come right out of the gate in AAA smoking hot. Actually, when he went back down, he actually struggled for a bit, and I think the Orioles kind of waited until he had picked things up a little bit, and they call him back up, and you know, so far, things have looked much better since he's come back, which has certainly been an encouragement to see. He's had 44 plate appearances since coming back and has 10 hits, which is quite good to see. He's walked three times too, so getting on base plenty. And you mentioned the home runs, like that's been fun to see too. He had a stretch of three straight games with a home run. He's swinging the bat much better. Yes, he has struck out in every game. That's okay because they're much more limited. He's only had one multi-strikeout game that actually came today on Sunday. So we're recording this. He did not record a hit and had two strikeouts. But every other game since coming back has been one strikeout, which is fine. I think that with Holiday, you know, the contact skills are going to be fine. He was billed as a 70 grade hit. I tend to like, I like to see them separated, I guess. I think Arm Layton kind of first did this where he would separate hit tool and plate discipline. I think that's probably the best way to look at it here, because you look at it and Holiday's contact rates last year weren't 70 grade. I think above average to plus field a hit, but the plate discipline is really good here and the OBP skills are going to play. I think that Holiday's going to be fine. He hits the ball at ideal angles. He's barreling it up extremely well right now, which is fun to see. And how much does he run? I think that's a question mark. I really don't know. And that's kind of for fantasy purposes. I'm looking at him like, I genuinely have no clue how many bases he's going to steal. I don't think he's a big threat. Maybe he gives you 7 to 10 a year. But I think that the expectation, he stole 24 last year, but he was caught 9 times still. It's worth noting. But you know, still, Holiday's going to be a really good player. Maybe he's never a superstar. Maybe he's never a first-round talent. But I do think that he's going to be a really good player for a long time. Important to remember, he's 20 years old. So yep. To see him come back 20-year-old doing this in the majors is pretty impressive. For what it's worth, if he had gone to college, he would not be draft eligible until next summer. So that just puts it in perspective. And he's in the majors, and he's looking quite good.
Yeah, I think he's still younger than probably 2/3 of our top 500 prospect list right now.
Probably.
That's how young he is. And yeah, I think I kind of wonder, is he ever going to be like the number one second baseman for fantasy? I think he's in that discussion. And a lot of the current guys at the top of that rankings list, for the most part, are a little bit older. And Ketel Marte, I think is 30. Altuve's, what, 33 or 34? And Mookie, obviously, you know, he's over at shortstop now. Maybe he moves back. Yeah, it could be some real changing of the guard there at the top of that position. You know, Ozzy's still up there, but he's been hurt. It's wide open. Maybe Holiday gets up there and then takes over that new number one spot. We'll see. Yeah, I agree. I don't think he's going to be a first rounder, but could he just be like an annual second, third rounder? Yeah, I think that's the upside we're looking at here with Holiday. So, yeah, not surprised to see him really excelling now in his second stint in the major leagues. With Jackson Chourio, a similar story, but different path to get there. He was not sent back down. He was struggling. He got off to a good start first, like week or so of the season. And then he was really struggling through like the second half of April and most of May. After an 0-for-2 game on the 1st of June, slash line sat at 207, 251, 323. But since then, that's 52 games, 205 plate appearances since then. He's slashing 328, 376, 529, 11 doubles, 9 home runs, and 9 steals. He's still not walking a lot. You know, the walk rate's around like 6%. And over that time period, he's also only struck out, excuse me, that's the wrong number, 16.6%, which is very encouraging to see there. He's always going to be aggressive. He always has been. That's why I thought that this kind of might have been the case. Like, all right, he might struggle a little bit. Pitchers exploit that aggressiveness. But then the talent he has, he'll adjust. He'll get there. So, yeah, Jackson Chourio is looking like the potential first round or close to it talent that we all thought he had. He's still very young as well, 20 years old, and on pace for over a 2020 season here in his first year. XBA is 276. That's solid. 44.5% hard hit rate. Contact rates are 84% zone and around 73% overall. So solid there. Yeah, it means I could give you a lot of walks, and the OBP will probably be limited because of that. This is a potential 25-25 guy every year. And at this point, how high do you think we should be putting him in dynasty rankings, Chris? I saw people say that, I forget, somebody on Twitter was like, when I tweeted about him about 3-4 days ago, said, there aren't 10 guys I would take in dynasty over Chourio right now. What do you think about that?
It's a fair point, I think, given the struggles of the top 10, because, you know, thinking about it and looking at it, you've got your guys at the top that are, I would say, pretty safe. You've got Bobby Witt, you've got Gunnar Henderson, you got Ohtani, Soto, Tucker, still include him in that conversation.
Yep.
And then after that, you've got guys, you've got Ellie, but a lot of the guys are older. Yeah, I look at this list, at least my list, and Julio Rodriguez has struggled mightily this year. Acuna is hurt again and has been hurt quite often. So you have the range of 30-somes, like young 30s, Aaron Judge, Mookie Betts, Jose Ramirez, Bryce Harper. They're all 32 or going to be 32 very soon. Depends on how you look at it. I think it's a fair argument. And I think this is why you have to practice patience with these young players that come up. Teams know what they're doing. People were clamoring that he was overrated, send him down. They knew what they were doing when they handed him that extension. 8-year, 82 mil, then runs through 10 years with the club options. Like, the org knew the talent level. And yeah, I think that should be the expectation, because he was so aggressive, like you said, to come up and struggle. But since July 1st, I mean, we're talking a 331 batting average, a 378 OBP, and a 517 slug. Just 5 home runs, but 7 doubles over that span, 8 stolen bases. He went on a stretch last week where he had 5 straight multi-hit games, which is incredible. He's going to be a major power speed threat. I think he only is going to get better from this point. Should the expectation be that he hits 331? No, I don't think so at all, but he's doing things that most 20-year-olds aren't capable of doing, and it's pretty impressive, I have to say. And the contact rates have only improved over that span. You mentioned them, but they've improved throughout the year. He's chasing less. You look at the rolling chase rate, it's down. The zone contact since July 1st, 87% and 77% overall. That's really encouraging to see. Yep. 90 mile an hour average EV. Like, these are going to play near 50% hard hit. Chourio's a stud. And even in his struggles early on, he was still providing immense value in the field. And for him to hold his own in the outfield at his age and put up the kind of season he is, has been highly impressive. So yeah, I think Chourio is a stud. And yeah, I mean, if he finishes out the year, so we've got, you know, a little under 2 months. If he finishes out the year and he puts up anywhere, if he's 75% of what he's been over the last month and a half, I think he certainly has the argument to be in the top 10 of dynasty rankings. He's already knocking on that door.
Yeah, no, he's definitely in that discussion right now. And there's, I think, a big glob that he's now currently in. But yeah, a lot of those guys in that glob are hurt, having down years. At this point, would you rather have him or Julio? It's hard, right?
Julio's proven he can do it. So, like, he's shown for 2 seasons, 2022 and 2023, that he could put up elite numbers. And this year, it's been interesting to look at the profile, but things have certainly trended in the wrong direction. And I don't know if there's something going on, but he is striking out more. He's showing concerning whiff and chase numbers. And, you know, he's still young, but Chourio's hasn't shown that. Chourio, in my opinion, has been better in the plate discipline and contact department, which is I wouldn't have thought I would have said that, but yeah, I think that's a pretty good question at this point, which I don't know. Churio certainly is giving you that "what have you done for me lately" kind of thing.
Right.
So yeah, it's, he's making that argument.
So I just tweeted out a poll. We'll come back to this at the end of the show if we remember, just who people would rather have right now in Dynasty: Jackson Churio or Julio Rodriguez. I got a feeling this is going to be a pretty close poll, but we shall see.
Yeah, I can see that.
Send that tweet out right now. All right, so one more Jackson here to get to, and that is Jackson Merrill, who, believe it or not, is in the running for a batting title this season. Like, National League is wide open coming into Sunday's games. Luis Arraez, 302. You had Jerickson Profar, Shohei Ohtani, and Marcell Ozuna at 300 on the dot. Ketel Marte, 299. Alec Bohm, 298. And then in seventh at 294 is Jackson Merrill. Also had 17 home runs, 13 steals, strikeout rate below 20%. You'll probably finish around 75 to 80 runs and RBI as well. And he's one of those guys where he's just doing really good across the board. It has a lot of good metrics. Walk rate's a little low. Chase rate's a little high. But besides that, contact rates, zone, 85.5%. Overall, a little over 79%. 10% barrel rate, 44% hard hit rates. He just does a lot of good things across the board. And yeah, he's never going to be, I don't think, a stud in any area. But could he be an annual 25 homer guy? They hit you 275 or above and gives you 15 or so steals. Yeah, I think he absolutely could. Maybe he's like Brian Reynolds with some speed or something like that. And I did a poll not too long ago between the other two Jacksons, and I got a lot of people like, "Hey, why don't you put Jackson Merrill in that discussion?" I don't like Merrill quite as much as Churio and Holiday. So if I had to rank these three, I'd put him third, but that's no slight to him. I think he's a really good talent, a high floor player of that. And yeah, maybe the OBP will always be a little bit lower, but hey, if he's giving you a 280 plus, 20 plus, and 10 plus, you'll take that. And he's probably going to be a guy that settles into the top of that San Diego order long term with some good hitters around him. So just a guy that gives you a pretty good production across the board in all five categories. So at this point, I think Jackson Merrill has to be talked about as a top 50 overall player for Dynasty, Chris.
Yeah, he's certainly done everything possible to prove that. Another one that was extremely young and broke camp with the team, which was pretty impressive. He was still 20 at the time, turned 21 in mid-April. But yeah, he's put up some really good numbers. The under-the-hood stuff looks really good, too. And it starts with the contact's good, but he puts the ball on ideal launch angles consistently. It's one of the best sweet spot rates in baseball right now, which has led to a 10% barrel rate, 90-mile-an-hour average EV. Pretty solid, too. Yep. Like, the biggest flaw in Merrill's game as a prospect was ground balls. Would he ever lift the ball enough to be relevant? And that's exactly what he's done. We were looking at, I think 2 years ago, it was like 59% ground ball rate. Last year, it was still in the mid to upper 50s, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have that in front of me right now, but it was still pretty high. And then this year, the ground ball rate's down below 40%, which is wild to see that progression and how he's really improved his swing and his loft, the loft too in the swing, which has helped significantly. Get to the pull side a little more. It's a 30% pull rate, which is 7% below MLB average. If he can pull the ball a little more, that home run total is going to shoot up. But you can't argue the fact that he has 17 home runs and 436 plate appearances. That's pretty ideal to see. I had no clue that he was in the mix for the batting title, not going to lie. I guess the AL has had the dominance. Like, you look at the AL guys, and none of the NL guys would even come close to the American League batting title. But then you look, and yeah, the NL is wide open, like you said. A couple good games, and you all of a sudden, he's right in there. But yeah, the AL is ridiculous. You've got Bobby Witt, obviously, you know, just pacing everybody at 347. Kwan, Judge, Guerrero, Alvarez, Soto, before you get to the Luis Arraez. So six AL hitters have a higher batting average than the first NL hitter. So that's pretty interesting. But yeah, he's right in that mix, and he's been really good this year.
And it's funny, too, because Luis Arraez, we all know what he is, just a slap hitter hitting singles there. And then you got all these, except for Kwan's not a masher, more power than Arise, but you got Bobby Witt Jr. has 22 home runs, Judge 41, Vladdy 23, Yordan 24, Soto's at two more. He's at 30 this year. Like, all these sluggers in front of them. Yeah, the AL is, I mean, yeah, Bobby Witt Jr., he's 21 points ahead of Stephen Kwan. Barring some massive slump, I think Witt's going to have this AL batting title wrapped up here pretty quickly. But yeah, what Jackson Merrill's been able to do, he's been pretty, the power has come in bunches. You can say that, but just overall performance wise, like, he's been pretty consistent this entire season, and he's got good sprint speed. Again, it's across the board, a lot of good metrics there. So yeah, I currently have him 45th. I moved him up a good amount from last month. I think he deserves it. I think he's in that top 15 dynasty outfield discussion. And then he's continued to rot. Maybe he won't get to first, second round, but he'd be like an annual third round talent. Yeah, I think that's what we're looking at here with him. All right, enough with Jackson's here. Let's go to the Red Sox big three, all getting promoted earlier today to AAA. I was able to see the last AA game for Anthony and Teal today. Mayer was not in the lineup, but nice to see the three of those guys getting bumped up at the same time. You thought that'd be the case. They have been all promoted similarly and on a similar timeline here. That'd be really cool if they're all brought up. It won't be this year, but maybe next year, have them all brought up on the same day, whether that's opening day or sometime in month of May, something like that. I think that'd be pretty cool to see. But look at what they've done this year. All of them are hitting very well. You know, Roman Anthony, 267, 364, 477 slash line. Hit his 15th home run today. He also has 16 steals in 84 games. Kyle Teal, 294, 387, 456, 11 home runs, 9 steals, 19 doubles in 84 games. And Marcelo Mayer, 307, 370, 480, 28 doubles, 8 home runs, 13 steals in 77 games. Now, Chris, both of us have seen all three of these guys a lot. You down there in Greenville, me here in Portland, before they moved up to AAA Worcester now. From a fantasy perspective here, let's just talk about, you know, what we think these guys are going to be for fantasy purposes. Starting with Anthony, who I think most everybody has ranked the highest of these three. I've seen him inside some top 10s. Right now, I currently have him number 11 overall. What do you think we're looking at here for a fantasy impact from Roman Anthony long-term?
Yeah, I think that Anthony is one where he's obviously come on as of late, but people constantly question him. It's like, go on these streaks, and then I'm not going to say he struggles, but you know, they'll be like, he's struggling a bit. To me, Roman Anthony, he is just a little bit more lift away from being a 25 to 30 home run bat. The exit velocities speak for themselves. They're plus or better. I think the raw power might be better than plus. Like, he's just that kind of power bat. And you'll get to see it now. You'll get to see the public EVs. Savant, and he's going to put up some big ones. I think he put up a 116 just last week. It was just, he's got that kind of power. It's ridiculous. And people hated on him last year because he had too many opposite field home runs, which I think is weird, because when you're capable of hitting the ball opposite field over the fence, that speaks a lot of volume about your power, in my opinion. But he's gone through stretches where he struggled with breaking balls, and still, I think that spin could be an issue for him. I look at this profile and I think that he's going to run. He's moves extremely well. He's stolen 16 bags this year and he makes a lot of contact. Yeah, I think that, again, it's another case where it's like, oh, he's only a 266 hitter. I don't really care a lot about batting average for minor league hitters. I think there's a lot of variables that go on with that. I do think that Roman Anthony can be a consistent like 270 hitter. I do believe that the contact skills are above average. Pair that with plus power, above average speed. And yeah, I think the biggest thing that most people have missed on is the fact that he is a legit glove in the outfield. He's a great center fielder. Yep. Does he play center field in Boston? I don't know. And does it really matter for fantasy purposes? Not really, because his glove's good enough to stick in the field. But this bat's really strong. He's going to get on base at a high clip. Roman Anthony does everything the right way. And he's an incredibly hard worker. He's a good person. He is going to consistently get better, in my opinion. And I think that, again, he's right on the cusp of contributing at the major league level. Do they bring him up this year? I don't know. But if not, I think it's pretty early next year that all three of those guys come up. So I'm really excited about Anthony. I think Anthony is the biggest fantasy impact of these three. And yep. I don't really think that's close, in my opinion. I think that he just blows the other two away from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. If I had to rank them for fantasy, I have Anthony, then Mayer, then Teal. But there's a bigger gap from Anthony to Mayer than there is from Mayer to Teal. Like Mayer I have is like a top 40-ish prospect. Teal, I think I have like in the 50s right now. But yeah, Anthony, as I mentioned, I have number 11 overall because I think he runs the most out of this group. Like I don't think Mayer maybe gets 10, 15 steals a year. He's still running a little bit in the minor leagues. I don't think he's going to be a big burner long-term. So yeah, I think like 10 to 13 is probably like peak for him. Maybe more in like the 8 to 9 range as he gets older. But you know, a guy that could probably be with Mayer, and I don't see, there's not big, Mayer is a really good professional hitter. Like we've seen that. I mean, last year, throw last year out, just ignore last year, a lot going on, had a shoulder issue, just throw it out the window. And look at what he did in 2022 down in low A and high A. And then this year in double A, this guy is a 280 caliber hitter, has decent power. I'm not saying he doesn't have power, but I don't see him ever being more than like low 20s. Maybe he gets into the mid 20s, but I don't ever see 30. Let's just say that. I think he's going to be one of those guys that gets overvalued, to be undervalued a little bit and overlooked for fantasy to a degree, just because he's not the big, flashy, sexy fantasy profile, but he can do a lot of good offensively. The quality of his at bats are really good. Like there was very few at bats I can remember seeing, you know, him, you know, over the last, you know, season and a half when he was up here in Portland, where he just looked overmatched. There was not, even last year when he was dealing with the issues, he hit 189 last year in 43 games here, and there still wasn't many at-bats during that time where he looked overmatched or was made look foolish chasing a slider in the dirt or something like that. So I think he's going to be a very good player, a high-floor player at that, and maybe he's a back-end top 100 fantasy guy. I don't think he's going to be like a third, fourth-round pick or something like that. Anthony has that upside. I think Mayer could be a top 100 dynasty guy at some point. And then Kyle Teal obviously is, I think a lot gets discussed about his defense and rightfully, but he is a really good offensive, you know, catcher as well. We got last year, he hit 363 in 26 games after the draft. This year he's been hitting right near 300 with an OBP right below 400 for most of the season. He's got 15 plus homer pop, maybe even close to 20 homer pop. He's above average hit, above average power, solid approach at the plate, doesn't strike out, you know, too often, and walks at a good clip too. So, you know, maybe he's a guy that can get into that top 10 fantasy catcher discussion someday. Maybe not top 5, but I think he could be a solid back end starting catcher and one that you don't have to worry about ever moving off the position because of how good he is defensively and calling a game and framing and all this and that. That brings so much value to the Red Sox. So, yeah, I think Mayer Mayer and Teal could be above average for their position, with Anthony being the real high impact player. But you know, what are your thoughts on Teal and Mayer, Chris?
Yeah, Mayer's certainly, you know, picked it back up. And I know he was injured last year, but I saw him healthy before the injury. And I think he's made major improvements since then. He's hitting the ball much harder than he was at any point of his career. It's like a near 50% hard hit rate. It's really solid, hovering around that range all year. And the contact is inconsistent at times. And he has sometimes the knack to hit on the ground too much. He's rolling over balls. And so there are some negatives here that I've just seen. The positives are so many more line drives this year. That's the reason the average is back up. He's spraying line drives to all fields exceptionally well, which is really encouraging. And he's getting to the pull side lift much better than he has been in the past. I think Mayer has, you know, 20, 22 home runs in the bat, maybe 25 in a good year. And I think he can give you a respectable average. I still wonder if the contact skills are a little bit below average right now. And he's not going to run. I think that's really the biggest thing, is that you're not going to get stolen bases out of him. I know he has 13 this year. I don't see the profile being one where he is going to raise a below average runner right now. He's had some lower body issue. He has shoulder issue. He's got now a hip issue, which those things are concerning when we talk about prospects running. So I think that's the biggest separator for me, is I don't see him providing much in the stolen base department. Now with Kyle Teal, we have to separate from the standpoint of, like, what's the threshold to be a relevant catcher for fantasy purposes versus a relevant shortstop or outfielder? And I think Teal, just obviously the glove's really good behind the plate's extremely solid, but he's an incredible athlete. He's a polished bat. He's done a lot of things well throughout his pro career. And yeah, is he going to put up, you know, massive home run seasons? Probably not, but can he hit you, you know, 15 to 17 home runs a year? Absolutely, which is valuable behind the plate. He's not going to give you a zero in stolen bases. As I said, he's a really good athlete. He's going to move. He's got good instincts on the base paths, and he's going to hit for average. I really do believe that. He makes really good contact. He's been encouraging in that department from the beginning. It's a really solid rounded profile here with Teal. He's going to get on base a ton. I'm a big fan of what Teal brings to the table, and I think he can be a really solid fantasy catcher for a long time.
Yeah, he's going to be a really good catcher for a long time. Like, both sides of the ball, I've loved watching Kyle Teal just every day, seeing him every game I go to, both in terms of behind the plate and at the plate. Yeah, he's going to be a really fun one. And some corresponding moves here, obviously, few open roster spots now in Portland, and two of them are being taken up by Yostinson. Am I saying that right, Chris?
Yostinson.
I'm getting closer. Mm-hmm, yeah. I can spell it now without any typos. So I'm getting there. Yostinson Garcia and Alan Castro, both outfielders, taking two of those spots here. You know, Garcia, I think, is the more interesting one here for fantasy purposes. He's been, you know, having a phenomenal year down between low A and high A. 77 games overall. Like, look at this line. This is a very fantasy-friendly line here. Slashing 295, 369, 594, 20 doubles, 21 home runs, and 15 steals. He's on a 40-30 or so pace. If you extrapolate that out, just have a little fun with that. But, you know, Chris, obviously you've seen him a good chunk here with him being at Greenville for the last 2.5-3 months, whatever it's been. And in that time, he has 14 of those 15 steals came down in low A. I don't think it's going to be a big part of his game, but that power is legit. He's had 16 home runs in 53 games for Greenville. So what have you been seeing from Garcia, and what type of player do you think he's going to become long-term?
Yeah, this is a profile where I wouldn't expect him to run. When you see the body, you'll know why. It's very filled out already, and this is why minor league stolen bases really don't matter when projecting future stolen base output. So you look, oh man, he was 14 of 14 in single A, but yeah, he's one of three in high A, and that's not going to get any better moving up. Garcia is aggressive. He swings the bat quite often. He makes plenty of contact too. The contact rate's trended in the right direction all year, and it's way up from what it was in single A, which is really interesting. Yeah, in Greenville, running a 74% overall contact rate was encouraging, and that number's only been on the rise. He lifts the ball with ease. He never puts it on the ground. It's a sub 30% ground ball rate, which is really crazy. So that air percentage is very high. The walk rate's not good. Who cares? Like, I mentioned the aggressiveness because he's making so much contact. There's been times when he's been exploited by breaking balls, but really, like, it's hard to poke a hole in Garcia at the plate. He mimics Manny Ramirez to a T. Everything from the hair to the stance to everything, it looks like Manny Ramirez in the box, and he's performing like him too, man. He can put the ball out of the park to all fields. The pull rate's good, so plenty of poolside power. The EVs are incredible. He's hit the ball very hard all year. Having near 1,000 OPS in Greenville is just ridiculous with how good that he's played, and he's even serviceable in the field. I think that people are like, this guy's going to be a DH. And honestly, like, when he first came up, I was like, I don't see this working. The more I've watched, like, I actually think that Stinson Garcia is a good glove. He's average, but shoot, that'll play. He makes plays. I'm like, all right, I can see it. He's played center field some too. So yeah, I think that, yeah, you look at it, he's listed, I think he's listed like 160 3 some places, if I'm not mistaken. He's definitely like every bit of it. I'd say he's 210 to 220. He's 6'2", 220. And yeah, so don't think about the 163 list weight that you've seen. But yeah, Garcia's good. It's one of the more impressive performances that I've seen in Greenville in my years there. And I've seen a lot of good ones come through, and it's been incredible to see Garcia. But Antonio Alan Castro, he's been no slouch either. And it's interesting because Castro was really bad to start the year, but all the underlying data was good and improved. And when I saw him in spring training, like we were on the backfield, just like, he looked big. He looked more muscular. He looked like he had added bat speed. I'm like, all right, this guy is going to break out, in my opinion. And the first couple months were really bad, but he's been completely overshadowed by Stenson Garcia and several others. But Castro's performed extremely well. You look at the last like couple of months, and in his last 39 games, it's 12 homers, 11 doubles, and 3 triples. 291 batting average over that span, 371 OBP, over 1,000 OPS. Like, that'll play. So Castro, no slouch himself, and I think that he's one that's gotten underrated because the season-long line is it's subpar. It's 246 average and 821 OPS, 14 homers, 11 steals, but the majority of all that production's come in the last month and a half. So does it continue? I don't know. We'll see, but big fan of both, but I think Garcia, like, he is very solid. I'm excited to see what he does in Double A.
Yeah, as am I. It's going to be fun to get some live looks here over the last, for the next month or so here in Double A. Where do you have Garcia ranked, Chris? Like, is he pushing like top 100 for you yet?
Yeah, I mean, he's 30-ish range right now. I think that he is just continuing to show these skills in Double A away from being top 100. If this was a profile that I think that a lot of people are just assuming that he's not going to play outfield, but knowing the fact that he plays a decent outfield really helps his stock, in my opinion. And like, he's no Anthony, like Miguel Blyce is incredible in the field too, but Garcia holds his own. So I think that, yeah, he's a strong month and a half away in Double A of continuing these skills. I don't even care. I don't care about box score. I don't care how many home runs he hits. I just want to see the skills continue to be there for him. Yep. And not get exploiting as Double A pitching. If he does, then I think that top 100 is certainly fair.
Yeah, that's very fair right there. All right, moving on. We had somebody ask us in Discord talk about two players here. So we figured we throw them in here before we get up to three up, three down to end the show. A couple of just underrated, undervalued kind of fantasy stars here over the last few months and for most of the season. We got Luis Garcia Jr. and Bailey Ober. Let's start with Luis Garcia Jr., who I actually have in a couple of teams this year, both redraft and dynasty. It's been a godsend because, like, in my home keeper league, I traded for Bryson Stott before the season. That hasn't really worked out well, but I also picked up Luis Garcia Jr. earlier in the year, so he's now my starting second baseman in that league. He's quietly doing his thing. 14 home runs, 19 steals in 396 plate appearances, 293, 328, 463 slash line. You look at the profile, nothing like stands out and wows you, but he's a little bit above average quality of contact, 8% barrel, 41% hard hit rate, 89 mile an hour average exit velocity, zone contact around 87%, overall around 79%, a little bit of a higher chase rate, a little bit of a lower walk rate in that Jackson Merrill-esque way, but contact skills are there, doesn't strike out, and he's got a decent little power speed blend, not a burner, but he's running on the base pass. He's got a chance at a 20-25 season. Doesn't have a lot of runs in RBI because that Washington lineup overall isn't the greatest, but hey, if he's going 20-25 or right around there with a 290-ish average, maybe he's a guy that we should be talking about as a top 100 player. He's not flashy, but you know, could he be a back-end top 100 guy? Yeah, absolutely. Given the skills he has, I could definitely see that. You know, what are your thoughts here, Chris?
Yeah, if you've looked, then do you know, take a guess where he ranks among second baseman on the Rasball Player Rater?
Ooh, I have not looked. Let me think. Among second baseman, let's see. I feel like Ketel Marte is ahead of him. Doesn't have Mookie eligible. Or almost Mookie's been hurt for a while. He wouldn't be up there anyway.
He's on there, but he's below him.
Okay. Yeah, he's been out too long. Ozzie's been hurt. And down. Is he second behind Ketel Marte?
He's third. Altuve's the only other ahead of him.
So. Oh, Altuve, yes.
Yep. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's great.
Yes, and it's been a well-rounded profile. And it's not shocking, actually. He, in April, two of the four hardest hit balls in his career happened in the first week of the season. Showed me that there was, and I didn't act on it. I tweeted about it on April 4th, but I didn't really act on it and jump on him in all my leagues, which I had. But as you mentioned, everything looks really good. He's aggressive. It's okay. Like, it plays. He doesn't walk, but certainly plays better in an average than an OBP league. But man, it's been wild to see how good he has been. And yeah, I think that there's no, does he have this kind of success again next year? Maybe not from a power speed standpoint. It's like average power across the board. He hasn't really stolen this much ever in his career, but maybe that continues. But there have been leaps in the barrel rate, the average EV, the launch angle, the sweet spot rate. Like, everything you want to see is improved. It's just, does this continue beyond this year? And I don't see why not. He's 24 years old. He's got a good frame. There was definitely some projection for power on that frame. It just hadn't materialized. But yeah, it's crazy to think about like how good he's been and where he ranks among second basemen. It's just, this is what you drafted Ozzy Albies hoping he would do. And here Luis Garcia is, who probably didn't get taken in most typical NFBC like 30-round drafts. And he's been incredible. So yeah, it's been awesome to see Garcia. Even if he regresses to something like next year and he goes like 15-15, then what's the difference in him and Bryson Stott, really?
Right.
So I think the potential's there. People's complaint to me is that he doesn't play against lefties enough. Who cares? They're shielding him against lefties and the stats are really good. Like, he's still getting the plate appearances. I'd rather him not play against lefties. He has 77 plate appearances to lefties, but I'd rather him not play against really good lefties and put up horrific numbers for my team than him play every day and just put up a 624 OPS like he has against lefties. So I'm fine with him playing the majority of time against right-handed pitching, which he has an 832 OPS, and it's been really impressive. Every home run has come against a righty. It's a 301 average against righties. Again, they've pretty much shielded him from lefties to this point.
He's doing what I hoped Bryson Stott would have been doing when I traded for him this past offseason. So, yeah, it's been great. What do you think? So I looked up his ADP for Luis Garcia. I looked up for an NFBC draft champions drafts in the month of March. Where do you think his OBP was, Chris? His ADP, excuse me.
540.
It was actually a little bit high. It was 402.
Okay.
But he was taken as the 41st second baseman. Some names he was behind: Chris Taylor, Jose Caballero, Brendan Rodgers, Ahmed Rosario, Jeff McNeil, Vaughn Grissom, Brendan Donovan, Gavin Lux, Whit Merrifield. A lot of guys that he's been, obviously he's been better than all of these guys. A lot of the top 10 was just like, it's been Nico Horner, Gleyber Torres, Andrés Giménez, Xander Bogaerts, Bryson Stott. One of the top guys did not pan out this year. That Ozzy Albies has been hurt. Semien's been down. Yeah, been a very pleasant surprise. And as Bailey Ober, a pleasant surprise because he was pretty good last year as well. But you look at what Bailey Ober has done lately, and he's been one of the better pitchers in baseball over the last, I don't know, like what, 2 months or so. You look at his last 9 starts, spanning 61 and a third innings, 1.76 ERA, 0.73 WHIP, 5.8% walk rate, 31.9% strikeout rate, and a 1.52 batting average against. I sent out a tweet actually yesterday on Saturday. So for this season, Ober is one of 7 qualified starting pitchers with a WHIP under 1 and a K-minus walk rate above 20%. The other 6 are Tarik Skubal, Logan Gilbert, Joe Ryan, Tyler Glasnow, Dylan Cease, and Jack Flaherty's ERA back in the mid-3s. He had a bit of a rocky first few months up and down, but he has looked really good lately, and I think he's getting that. I don't think he's, you know, obviously not anywhere near an SP1, but could he be a back-end SP2, high-end SP3, like that SP25 to 30 range or so? Yeah, I think he's definitely in that range as long as he can avoid those blow-ups he had earlier in the year. But there's a lot of good going on right now for Bailey Ober.
Yeah. People were quick to write him off and thought that he just had completely fallen apart, but he's been ridiculous. And it's showing. Like, he's just back to who he has been in the past. It's not flashy. It's not overly dominant, but it is a really good player and a really good arm, where I think his fastball is up in the spring, so it vaulted him up boards. I think I took him around like 120 in a redraft league on NFBC. He's around that spot. But again, he struggled out of the gate. I was wondering if that it would all come to fruition. His first start was awful. It was like 8 earned and 1 1/3. It was really bad. Even through the end of May, he had a couple bad outings, like 5 earned, 6 earned over that span. But he's really picked it up, as you mentioned. And since June the 16th, that's when he cherry-picking stats, whatever. But when he really started getting things going, 9 starts, 61 innings. So he's eating plenty of innings over that span. That's been really encouraging to see. He's had a complete game. He's had several 8-inning, 7-inning starts. But a 1.76 ERA, 3.0 FIP, like everything backs at 72 Ks to 13 walks in those 61 innings. Yeah, I think that Ober is pushing his way back into being a top 100 pick next year, and deservedly, because he's been really good.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go on to 3 up, 3 down here. We got pitchers on the docket this week. We got 2 Nationals arms in here, and even a name, our first down, we'll get to in a second, who's not technically a prospect, but he's in the minor leagues right now. So we mixed him in as well. But let's start with Travis Sikora of the Washington Nationals. Over the last 30 days, he's had 4 starts spanning 18 innings, only allowed 7 hits, 3 earned runs, 6 walks in those 18 innings with 33 strikeouts. So 1.50 ERA and a 0.72 whip. Sikora obviously coming back from injury, but he's been really good this season. And I know, Chris, you've been beating the Sikora drum, you know, on Twitter, so to speak. Where are you at on Sikora? You know, how high do you think he can rise in rankings here over the next year or so?
He's already well into my top 100 at this point. And does I think he has a chance to vault his way into a top-tier pitching prospect? I do. I really believe in the pedigree. He's got the frame. He was a big-name pitching prospect in the draft last year. And then you factor in, like, the Nationals have – they overhauled their player dev department last offseason, and they have done incredible things on the pitch side. It's been ridiculous how good they've been across the board. They've had a ton of pitchers take major steps forward, which I think is a testament to what they did this offseason. They went out and they made the changes that they need to make, and it's worked out so far. So I've been really encouraged by that. And I think that they're going to be, you're going to continue to see this. Yarlin Susana, who we're going to talk about, is throwing strikes, but Sikora has just been nasty all year and continued to get better start after start. He's had 2.42 ERA on the year, but as you mentioned, it's been just every start he seems to get a little better. In June, it was a 2.41 ERA. In July, it was a 2.12. Has not allowed a run in August so far. He's allowed 1 base runner the entire month of August. Sure, it's 2 starts in 11 innings, but 1 base runner and 18 strikeouts in 11 innings is just absurd. So, you know, I really believe in his stuff. I hope they keep him in Fredericksburg all year, because I'll see Fredericksburg to end the year. I've already seen Wilmington. Wilmington will not be anywhere close to me again, which I was hoping he'd bump to Wilmington for that series that I had in Greenville, but I'm hoping he stays in Fredericksburg, because I really want to see this guy pitch in person before next year. But yeah, Sikora, he looks the part. He has the arsenal. I think the command's been solid, and the results have been there for sure. So I'm way in.
All right. Feels like it's a good time to play a little who you got here. With pitching prospects, Travis Sikora edition. All right, Chris, let's go Sikora or Quinn Matthews.
Still Matthews for me. Matthews is pretty high up, like near top 50 for me, and he's obviously got proximity on his side, and yeah, I'll lean that way. I'll keep with Quinn there ahead of him.
All right. Yeah, I have Quinn a little bit ahead as well. How about this one? This guy we almost put in the downs. Let's go with Sakura or Noble Meyer, who's having a little bit of a rough time lately.
I think this is where it gets pretty close. I don't think they're far off. I've got them in the same tier when I updated a couple of weeks ago. I could be swayed to say Sakura because he's only a couple pitching prospects behind Meyer at the moment. I wouldn't be shocked if I do get to see Sakura pitch and everything checks out, then I wouldn't be shocked to see him jump him. So I think that's pretty close at this point.
Yeah, I still have Meyer ahead, and I still have very high long-term outlook for Meyer. But yeah, he's been still struggling with his command and strike throwing this year. So he's dipping my rankings a little bit here, but yeah, I still have Meyer ahead. Now let's do a couple more here. How about Sakura or Markievicz Tink-Hentz?
I think that I have Tink ahead. I have Tink pretty close to Quinn Matthews right now. Yeah, I think I'd still lean Tink, but Sakura, again, he's pushing up. Not obviously to this range where I've taken him over one of these guys, but he's getting close.
All right, I'll end with this one. This next name is, you know, maybe the most polarizing name among quote-unquote top pitching prospects. So we'll end with Sakura or Jacob Mizierowski.
I think I'll lean Sakura at this point just because I devalue relievers a little bit in fantasy, and I think that's probably what Mizierowski is. He's looked really good out of the bullpen in some stints, one-inning stints, and I think that's because they're doing that because he's going to come up this year and pitch out of the pen. They probably go back to developing as a starter. I have serious questions about the command, though. So I might lean Sakura, but it is really close here. Just like looking at the rankings, I think it's like a spot or two apart, but I'll take Sakura.
Yeah. I'll still lean Mizierowski. I don't know if I like it, though. Some days I will, some days I won't. I have such a love-hate relationship with Mizierowski. Some days you're like, oh, man, this is like the top three pitching prospect in the game. Yeah. He has that upside. Other days or maybe a few start stretch, you're like, damn, this guy's walked like 13 in his last three starts. It's just so up and down with him. It's maddening, really. I never know. Yeah. If I did a little plot graph or whatever, his ranking on my spreadsheet, it's like up, down, up, down, up, down. I can't. He never settles into one area. He's so up and down. So I guess I will still say Mizierowski for me there, but that might change soon because Sakura is, yeah, really good here and skyrocketing up rankings. So this first down, though, this is the quote-unquote major league guy that's in the minor leagues right now and not faring well at all. That's Reed Detmers. This has been a really bad year for Reed Detmers. In 12 starts with the Angels, he had a 6.14 ERA, and this hasn't really gotten any better. Yeah, he's in the PCL, but he has a 7.11 ERA in 11 starts in the PCL. He's striking out some batters, sure. He's got 72 strikeouts in 57 innings, but he's also allowed 17 home runs and has a 295 batting average against. If you want to say that's a little bit inflated by the PCL, sure. Maybe give a little bit of that to the PCL, but that you can't sit here and look and say, oh, yeah, he's pitching well. It's just a PCL. No, he's been pitching terrible. He has, for the most part, all season. Outside of first four starts, he was really good. But then since if you want to include his last eight starts with the Angels, so this is a 19-start sample size between the majors and AAA. It's a 7.86 ERA and 27 home runs allowed. That is a major issue. So I know people were hoping on, Reed Detmers, the upside's there. He'll come back. He'll be fine. I don't know. I mean, I'm not writing him off by any means, but I think there's a lot of red flags here, and I think it's going to be a little bit longer before we see him back in the major leagues and probably even longer than that before we see him back pitching potentially effectively in the major leagues. And I don't think it's going to be this season. I think this is complete loss season for him. I've never really been the Detmers guy. I think his command is too inconsistent for my liking. Gives up too many home runs. Obviously, he has the strikeout stuff, but I don't know. I'm not 2 feet out the door on Detmers, but you know, I've always been 1 foot out the door and not a guy I want to target. But I don't know. Chris, do you have any positive thoughts here with Detmers?
Nope. I'm rather out. If I wasn't out before, like, he looks completely lost. He needs out of the org for sure. I think he needs a new home and somewhere that can really just totally revamp him. And I think it's going to take some time, but yeah, I'm interested to see if he goes somewhere else this offseason. I think he should have gotten traded at the deadline, but I guess the cost wasn't, or the return wasn't very, you know, high at that point like they wanted. So obviously his stock's down even more. So we'll see how this all plays out. I'm out.
What is a higher number rest of season? Reed Detmers home runs allowed or Christian Moore home runs hits in the Angel system?
We'll take more home runs allowed by Reed Detmers.
Probably. But Christian Moore is on ridiculous start to his career. Yeah. But I'm sure we'll talk about him again at some point, but not today. Our next up here, we'll keep it right in that Washington Nationals organization. As Chris alluded to, we got Jarlene Susana came over in the Juan Soto deal over the last month, four starts, 20 innings, only six earned runs allowed, 270 ERA, 0.95 whip. But I think the biggest thing here, I think something you might have mentioned on a previous episode, Chris, you know, how much his strike throwing has improved this year. Because over these last 20 innings, 30 strikeouts to just two walks. And he's another name that is flying up prospect rankings right now. And there's a lot of pitching prospects on the rise. And I think Susana doesn't quite get as much recognition as he probably deserves. I think a lot of the other names, like Quinn Matthews and all these types, and Brandon Sproat and others that are getting a lot of the hype right now. But Susana, yeah, he's really been getting better and better as the season wears on. I think he's a guy that could be, if not in the top 100, at least in that discussion before the end of the season, and probably already is right now. But I don't know. Where do you have Susana ranked, Chris?
Let me look and see. I have him currently ranked 78th.
So yeah, he's already in your top 100.
Yeah, he's legit. It's the, and I saw him last year in single A when Fredericksburg was down here in Columbia, and he's worlds better than he was last year. He was good last year, but he's just a different arm. People have said he's an RP, like there's no chance he starts for a variety of reasons, but in the wise words of Lee Corso, not so fast, my friend, because Yoan Susana he's built. He's listed 6'6", 235. He's every bit of it. It's pure muscle. That man, I would not mess with, because he looks like he could take you out real quick. And he's got the most effortless 102-mile-an-hour fastball I've ever seen. He lived 102 the entire game I saw him, and he still hit 102 in the fifth inning, which is just silly. And it's like low effort. If you haven't seen him, just go search my handle and Susana. It looks like he's just casually playing catch, and it's 102. His changeup, 94 miles an hour. The slider lived in the around 90. It's really good stuff with Susana, and he can get away with location on the fastball because he just blows it by everybody. It's just absurd. And you mentioned the strike throwing. I think that's really been the biggest thing. Like, you go back, and before the first 2 months of the year, it wasn't bad. I think even then, like, he was sitting around league average strike rate, 62%. And people, the walk rate was high, 13% walk rate in those first 2 months. But the strike rate was still good. Strike rate sitting around league average, okay. Yeah, that'll absolutely play. But since June 1st, like, something clicked. It's 67% strikes, 7% walk rate. Like, those are both plus. And 480 OPS against over that span, 38% strikeout. So 31% K minus BB with a near 19% swing and strike rate. It's just silly. He's insanely good. And again, just how little effort, it was pretty impressive to watch. Like, the fact that he gets the velo that effort, I think, is a big thing, because he's like, I can tone it back a little bit and throw strikes, and the stuff is still there. And that's exactly what he's done. Susana is awesome, and I think that he's only going to get better. He's 20. He's a young 20. He's huge. He's jacked. He throws the strikes. He's got the arsenal. Like, I'm all aboard the train. I'm It was one of the better starts I've seen this year for sure.
It's always hard to trade away a guy like Juan Soto if you're the Nats, but look at the four. Like Susanna was like the fourth guy in that deal. Obviously, you got Mackenzie Gore, they got James Wood, they got CJ Abrams. And then it's like, oh yeah, let's throw in this kind of like fun young pitching prospect. And he was what, 18 at the time, probably. And look, he's turning into one of the better pitching prospects in the game. And yeah, the fact that he can dial it back and that still means like upper 90s for him, that's just phenomenal. And that's I love Susanna's slider. You mentioned it's in the upper 80s, 80 to 90, more of a gyro slider with that downer action on it. It's just a beautiful pitch, and changeups come a long way as well. So yeah, he's definitely moving up rankings for sure. Not so much on this next guy from the Chicago White Sox, Jake Eater. I think, Chris, you mentioned before when we were figuring out who to put on here, you said people still want him to be a thing, and that's absolutely true. Yeah, I've seen that as well, but he just isn't there this year. He's 25, AAA, 16 and a third innings over the last 30 days. He's allowed 21 hits, 19 runs, 12 walks, and 14 strikeouts. And it's not like he's just been bad over the last month. It's been really the whole season. He's just not been pitching effectively. Way too many walks. Look at this year in 19 starts. He's got 43 walks in 90 and two-thirds innings. Has a 1.62 whip. ERA's over 6. He's been absolutely terrible in AAA in his four starts, that stats I just listed off, and wasn't really that good in AA either. There's still some upside there. He could still miss bats, though that's even gone down this year too. But I don't know. Is he even a starter long-term? Is he going to move more into a middle relief role? I don't think it's a guarantee he sticks in the rotation, but I don't know. There's a lot. I have a lot more questions right now than answers with Jake Eater. So yeah, he's one that's been consistently falling down my rankings pretty much all season.
Yeah, it's a weird profile. It has not gotten back to where he needs to be. Like we saw in the AFL last year, and the stuff just really wasn't there. He was pretty rough there. And this year, it's more of the same. It's just a lot of inconsistencies. And yeah, I have severe questions about who Jake Eater is at this point. The fastball sits 93. It's pretty generic shape. There's nothing really unique about it, which is not so great. Like the changeup's good. Like I do the potential with the changeup. It has some decent characteristics and it does miss bats. And then he's throwing the curveball as well, which it's curve slider, like it varies a bit, it mixes together, but at the end of the day, don't love the, I think he's probably more of a reliever than a starter, but I think he's going to get run as a starter. I don't think he can throw enough strikes or be efficient enough getting batters out that I really want Jake Eater on my fantasy teams. I know a lot of people still love Jake Eater, which is, yeah, it's just not my taste that I like. So I'm not really in.
Yeah, I'm pretty out. I still have him in my 500, but I just looked, it was 435 last month. He might fall out of the 500 this month. He's going to be very much in danger. Maybe he still sneaks in the last 10, but yeah, not looking good for Jake Eater right now. One more up, one more down. The final up going to the Texas Rangers organization with Alejandro Rosario, who's really been pretty good all season, but look at over his last four starts, 21 and two-thirds innings, allowed 5 runs for a 2.08 ERA, a 0.92 whip, and 29 strikeouts to just 3 walks. And they got for the entire season between low A and high A, 77 and two-thirds innings, 2.43 ERA, 0.95 whip. And listen to this strikeout-to-walk ratio, 114 strikeouts to just 12 walks. That is phenomenal there. Much better strike thrower now than he was in college at the University of Miami, and really been a big breakout this year in that Texas Rangers organization. Good three pitch mix, fastball, slider, change him. Not the biggest guy in the world, 6'1, 185, 190. Throws strikes, commands his pitches well, and can miss bats. I think he's another one that's not getting talked about enough. I was even guilty of underranking him. I have since corrected that, and he's legit. And very exciting arm. He's just a fifth-round pick in last year's draft, signed for about $438K, and Texas looks like they got a real steal so far with Rosario, Chris.
Yeah, this is another org that has done a tremendous job with arms, especially not the super flashy, like arms like Rocker's back. Rocker looks legit, but lighter. I think there's some other issues there, aside the point. But anyway, they have done a great job of developing these under the radar arms. And Rosario has certainly been that. He was really impressive in my looks of him earlier this summer. Saw him early July, late June. And you know, he's 95, 97 on the fastball. It's got some heavy arm side run to it. He's throwing a splitter at 90, 91, slider in the mid 80s. He misses bats with all three pitches. It's heavy strike throwing ability, misses a ton of bats. I mean, it's 18% swing strike rate in high A right now with a near 67% strikeout rate. Yeah, that'll play. It was 68.5% strikes and 17.5% swing strike in single A. I think he's probably due for a bump to double A. But they just are loaded with arms across the board. It's a, you know, 22-year-old college arm from the 2023 draft, as you mentioned, where he's looked the part. Man, he's been so good. And, you know, it's not just performance-based. Like, yeah, performance has been really good. It's all backed by every underlying metric you can look at. I think that Rosario is a top 100 prospect at this point. He's certainly got, he checks every box that I want to see.
Now, who do you think is better long-term between him and Emiliano Teodo?
Rosario, just given the fact that he's just going to be reliable and throw strikes, and yeah. Teodo's going to be more electric, sure, but at the end of the day, I'll take the guy that I trust to throw strikes and be a starter long-term, even though Teodo may be more fun.
Yeah, I'd say Teodo has more upside, but Rosario definitely much safer, no doubt about that. The last down here, we're going to Detroit with Ty Madden. Over the last 30 days, 19 and two-thirds innings allowed. It's a weird stat line because you'll get hits and runs allowed are terrible. 33 hits, 19 earned runs in 19 and two-thirds innings. But he also has a 29-3 strikeout-to-walk ratio, you know, in those four starts. So a weird line overall, but Chris, Madden has had a really tough time in AAA this year. I mean, started off the year in AA, four starts, 2.55 ERA, you know, whip was 0.79, 22 strikeouts, three walks. Great. And he pitched pretty well there last year as well. Gets the bump to AAA, and the wheels have fallen off, and every other part of the car has fallen off as well. 8.51 ERA in 16 starts. A lot of 88 hits in the 66 and two-thirds innings and a whip of 1.85. This was a guy that was in top 100 discussion at this time last year, which I think was legit for where he was at last year and then how he was performing on the mound. But, man, it's just been a, you know, a free fall for the last 4 months, Chris. Are you, you know, confident in the turnaround? Would you be looking to buy low or you out at this point?
Yeah, I chalked all his issues up to the ABS early on in AAA, and yeah, it hasn't really gotten better. It did out of the gate, but it seems to me like he's just completely lost all confidence, his ability to land his pitches where he needs to. Now, the stuff still there, I believe. I think that this can be a case where he does bounce back, and maybe this is like the ultimate buy low this offseason, and maybe not, but you know, the fastball sits 94. It's got decent movement. It's just average, but the slider has a 43% whiff rate this year, which is really good. Changeup's got a 43% whiff rate. That's super encouraging. So in a curveball with a 31% whiff rate. So like the secondaries are there, but it's like, okay, why are you getting hit so hard on some of these pitches where it's okay, you can miss bats, but fastball is a 390 average against and a 771 slug, which is just insane. The secondaries have been fine. The slider has been his worst secondary from the standpoint of like batting average against at 283, but just a 528 slug. The four seam has noticeably been bad, like as far as his getting destroyed on that pitch. And the location just hasn't been great. You look at a heat map of it, it's like, eh, like this really is not ideal by any means. So if he can correct that, then I think he'll be okay. It's just got to be location on the fastball. He's not, like, you could say, oh, he maybe needs to throw a sinker. He's not going to throw a sinker just based on the movement profile of this pitch. I don't see that happening. But I am curious to see what his offseason looks like. Because right now, like, I think the biggest thing just comes down to fastball location, just digging in a little deeper. I still believe in the stuff. I want to see him bounce back. He's certainly been a major fade. It's been a really weird year for him, but I think there's a chance that he can improve. We shall see, but I am curious to for this offseason and what it looks like.
Yeah, and then there's going to be plenty of chances for him to step into that rotation, because you look at the Detroit rotation right now, Chris, and that meme of the Ferrari next to like the really crappy like house or whatever. That's basically, it's Tarik Skubal, and I can't even tell you who the number two is right now. Maybe is it Kenta Maeda right now, given some guys that are on the IL currently. I was looking at that earlier today. I write my weekly starting pitcher rankings and planner for FTN every Sunday morning, and just looking at the upcoming rotation for Detroit, I was like, man, it's Skubal as the gem on top of a pile of dog crap. It was bad, but so plenty of opportunity for him next year or two if he can kind of figure it out. But yeah, I'm not out on him by any means. Stuff is still pretty good, but yeah, he definitely has fallen on my rankings a good bit this year. But I'd be fine buying low. It's a low cost, and if he turns it around, you can get pretty solid ROI there. But that is going to wrap us up. Thank you to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We will be back with you again on Thursday. But until then, everyone take care.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.